Good morning and welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast. I'm Ashton Hines. I am half of the Real Estate Heavyweights. I have flipped four houses. I have a long-term hold. I'm a real estate agent. I also work in home health as a physical therapist assistant, and I'm tapping my foot into the pond of helping people edit their podcast and do some social media stuff. So I've got a lot of stuff going on. And luckily in my life, I have someone to teach me the ropes in the real estate. He's been in the business for over 20 years here in the DFW area. He's flipped over 200 houses. He's got a commercial building, a bunch of rentals, and his name is Tavis Westbrook. So he comes to me every week on Fridays and we look at the DFW market update, any news of the day, and we always try to teach you something about the investing world. So check out those episodes. But we also bring you great interviews like today, where we bring you Scotty Sanders, a friend of mine from back in West Monroe, but he has been a leadership expert and consultant for over 40 years. He started out really young, where he was successful in just the world of business, and he transitioned into working as a consultant with the churches of Louisiana and then broadened that out all over the country. And now he's written a couple books and he is just an international known speaker and leadership consultant. And he is here today to help us figure out our life and figure out how we can do things a little bit more efficiently, translate over that into real estate. But the things he talks about and the books he mentions can definitely help you out in all sorts of areas. If you have not, please like, subscribe, share this podcast with someone else. Please check us out on YouTube. A lot of people are saying that we are the best looking plus sized real estate podcast hosts this side of the Mississippi. And the only way to verify that is to check out our YouTube channel that is up and running and full of all of our podcasts. So there you have it. Sit back, relax, get a pen and paper because he mentions all sorts of books and tips you're going to want to keep track of. And until next time, here is our episode with Scotty Sanders.
You know, it was more of I like my own learning style and what I want to do. Read the things I want to read. Study the things I want to study. I wasn't excited about algebra and not so much about English, you know. But for things that I was passionate about, and I love reading books on personal development growth. There's a lot more to that beyond just the consulting because it's led to starting two nonprofits, starting a speaking business as well. And in some ways, it's married that entrepreneurial business background into a heart for ministry and others.
You are now listening to the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast.
You see this guy here staring back at you? That's your toughest opponent. Every time you get into the ring, that's who you're going against. I believe that in boxing, and I do believe that in life.
Your weekly deep dive into DFW real estate, life, and beyond. With your hosts, Tavis Westbrook and Ashton Hines.
All right. Well, good deal, Scotty. We are so happy to have you here. I've told Tavis a lot about you, and I know I kind of gave a little bit of your intro a second ago, but why don't you kind of what brought you to the DFW area? A lot of our people who are listening are in the Dallas area, but I know you haven't always been here. And so if you could just kind of get us caught up on what brought you here, your professional background that kind of got you to your journey right now, where I know you're working with a lot of organizations and individuals on productivity and that sort of thing. And I know we're going to dive a lot into that, but get us caught up a little bit to what brought y'all here.
Yeah, thank you. And Ashton and Tavis, good to get to hang out with you guys. And it's an honor to be with you today. It really is. So I've got probably that little bit of a unicorn experience and background. I really do. I don't know many people, and I'm not saying it's a good thing for sure, but a different background. So I grew up in a very entrepreneurial family. In fact, I always say my dad may be the most competitive person I've ever met in my life. He's just ultra competitive person. So I grew up in a family where my grandfather actually had a grocery store. Then he had a furniture and appliance store. My dad bought it for my grandfather. So my first job was really working for my grandfather. And I think I started in the warehouse. I worked my way up to a delivery truck. And the biggest day was when at 15, my parents saw in me the ability to connect with people. And so I got to start selling on the retail store to adults. And man, it was great. And I actually was making a really good living on, you know, after school and then on summers and stuff, and loved getting to do that. I mean, it was just something I was passionate about. I enjoyed helping people and stuff. But I had this idea with my parents. It didn't go over real well with them. They didn't take the bait by any means about, you know, we need to start selling the electronics, you know, TVs. And at that time, video recorders were starting to get to be a pretty big deal. And they just weren't seeing the picture of that. Like, seriously, we don't want to do that. I said, well, how about if we do this? What if you let me open up a store within our store? Just give me a little bit of square footage. if I need to, I'd like to get rent free for a while, but eventually maybe I could pay you a little rent. Let's just see how it starts. And so at 17, I started my first business selling electronics and stuff. And a few years later, that turned into 10 stores in 3 states doing nearly $5 million worth of business. This would have been late 70s, early 80s. And again, it was one of those things like, I don't know if they realized what they were committing to. I promise you, I did not realize what I was committing to, because it didn't take me long to figure out. I was way, way over my head, overwhelmed, under-resourced. And I made enough mistakes in that first business that I could really write multiple books. But I guess I'm too vain and proud to put it all in writing. So that's kind of how I started my entrepreneurial background. It really, through an experience of one of our largest stores burning to the ground, it was really an eye-opening come to Jesus meeting, really, because, you know, for Moses, God spoke to him through a burning bush. For me, it took something a little bit bigger, a burning building. And through that, it really reoriented my life to say, what's really important to me? Because I saw the people I worked with, is really a means to my end to get a fancier car or a bigger house, and was very materialistic in that sense. And I just didn't want to be that person, and definitely didn't want to live a life that I couldn't be with my wife and my kids and that kind of stuff. And so it led me to live a life and pursue a life that had purpose and direction, but I could still be productive. And actually, it really led me on a journey. And I will just pause there, because there's another chapter that gets into, you know, what happened next.
So that whole chapter of your life, the electronics, the, you know, that's a part of me that I'm jealous of people who have that. So one of the questions that I was going to ask you about some of the other skills, but that natural, like, sales ability, when you went to your parents and you said, hey, I want to do this, those skills, obviously you hadn't read. I mean, were you into personal development at all? Had you read books? Like, what about you at 15 and 17, one, said, I think I can do this, but then just even had any sort of framework to know, this is how I sell, this is how I close, this is how I hire someone to help me out? Like, what was your journey as far as personal development that we know about now, back then?
Well, I had a huge advantage. One, my grandfather was phenomenal. He was a strong work ethic, connected well with people, but knew how to manage a business too. So he was good on the numbers, knew how to keep operations going well. And so I enjoyed having breakfast with my grandfather, my dad, most mornings, especially during the summer. I mean, that was a normal thing. We'd get things going at the store at 7:30. We'd go have breakfast, and it was just an ongoing, I don't think they would call it mentoring or pouring into, but we're just living life, going through experience and so forth. So I had that advantage that a lot of people gave me a vantage point most people just wouldn't get, you know, but I got it through them and learned from some of their own mistakes and how they process and some of those things. So, but in addition to that, I've always been a learner, except when I was in school. So let me add that caveat. You know, it was more of, I like my own learning style and what I want to do. Read the things I want to read, study the things I want to study. I wasn't excited about algebra and not so much about English, you know, but for things that I was passionate about. And I love reading books on personal development, growth. And at that time, we listened to a lot of cassette tapes. I can remember listening to Zig Ziglar and Jim Rohn and, I'm trying to remember another, his name escapes me, but a guy I listened to a lot as well, but I'll have to come back to his name in a minute. And then, so that was something I just poured in a lot. I was reading, you know, books on leadership, and Dale Carnegie's book, Think and Grow Rich, was one of the first books I can remember reading that just really made an impact on me as well. So I'm not saying I was at the level I got to, but I started reading, maybe it would be a book every couple of months or so, but just learning those things. Yeah. In addition to that, my parents would invest in me to send me to different conferences and stuff. You know, those are some of those opportunities. You'd show up at a hotel on a Saturday and you have an all day experience. They would send me to the market to represent them, to buy furniture in a market, and give me, say, you've got a budget of $200,000. I was doing that at 17 and 18 years old. I look back on that now, I'm like, had they just lost their mind? What were they thinking? You know, but so they saw something in me I didn't necessarily see in myself early on, and trusted me to do those things, knowing that I'd make some mistakes, but I would learn from those because I was a learner, and I would evaluate that. How could I avoid that from happening in the future? So a combination of some good mentoring, learn from others' mistakes, make my own mistakes, and have the safety net that I can make some and recover, but also just a desire to grow personally.
Yeah. Well, and Tavis, you don't know our relationship, Scotty, but, you know, Tavis, what I hear you saying a lot is that baptism by fire, and then having people around you that can kind of help you through that and encourage you. And that's really what happened with me on the flipping. You know, I had a few small flips early on. I jumped in, just tried to figure it out. And after my second one, I really reconnected with Tavis, kind of friends of a friends on Facebook, but connected with them there. And that's when I jumped into what Tavis would call a level two rehab, a serious rehab over in Richardson. I was basically in over my head. And fortunately, I knew enough to try it out and put myself out there. But I also had people around me, and I knew I was also, I guess, aware enough to say, I need help. And Tavis really jumped in there. So like Tavis, I know we've talked before, that idea of just taking that leap. And with Scotty, it was super early on. With me, it was way after, you know, 20 years after I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I tried my first flip. But taking that leap and sort of initiating that baptism by fire is key to a lot of, like a lot of those interviews that we've done. I mean, you hear that over and over, people just kind of putting themselves out there and then figuring it out, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. I was going to say that, you know, I mean, you'd mentioned before, Scotty, you know, that your background's not really in real estate, and obviously we're the real estate heavyweight podcast, but, you know, a lot of it, you know, just, you know, being entrepreneurs ourselves, and even though our, you know, our platform is real estate, you know, the mindset, right, that you've got to have when you're independent and you're growing a business and then you're ever evolving and changing, as you talked about. I mean, you threw a lot at us really quickly, right? From the way it started for you, from, you know, your baby steps within your family business, and then, you know, getting enough confidence to a point where you're like, hey, I see an opportunity here to expand this into the electronic world. Question for you is, what do you think it was at the time? And obviously it's probably a deeper, you know, deeper story there, but what was the next steps that allowed you to start, you know, expanding that or franchising it and growing into multiple stores? Like what was the turning point for you where you said, you know, we have to expand this and grow outside of our comfort zone?
Yeah. And again, in some ways I look back on that, Tab, as this, maybe we grew too fast too soon, right? You know what I'm saying? Because, and again, a little bit right. How I'm wired, I want to always see growth happen. And so probably undercapitalized, under leadership as far as, because what happens, you go from you're running it, and then you have to turn into an absentee manager, right? Then you have to really depend on others and developing right. According to them. I was good at I was like prolific in sales. I mean, I sometimes could sell, that we had records of, I'd sell 27 people in a row without missing one. And most guys, they're getting one out of three. I was just so good at that. I was really a prolific salesperson, and making that translation over to how do I become prolific in developing others. And I really didn't learn that skill till later. I had a want to and a desire, but it's still a lot around my own personality and stuff. So in some ways I said, hey, we're being successful here. Where are some other opportunities that we can do that as well? So we just looked at different locations. Where could we go? This is working here. Why can't we add stores in Mississippi and Arkansas and so forth? And so we just did that. And basically we probably open up maybe, I would say not two stores a year, maybe one to one and a half stores a year, something like that. But we just see the different opportunities. We say, hey, this market's open. They don't have a dealer doing this. Let's go in there and do those things. And we did acquire, I think, three stores as part of that. They weren't being run real well. What I realized is when I took it over, it probably run worse. You know, I thought it would be better, but it's probably worse than what they were doing. And so we just saw the opportunity. And like I said, we started out, I think our first year, we may have done $50,000. And then within 8 years, you know, we're doing close to $5 million. I think our best year was right at $5 million worth of business in 10 different stores. But the thing is, we really were not making, we may have been making profit via the IRS saying, I don't know if we had great cash flow, because it seemed like we're always strapped and always sure. Not enough money to do what we need to do. And then you make some bad decisions along the way because you're not thinking long term. And I was definitely not a long term thinker at that. It was more of, let's get it while the getting's good, yeah. Spend what you you know, don't put stuff back to build a business, take everything you can out of it and buy something else with it. So just a lot of mindset type things. Yeah. I had a growth mindset to grow, but I didn't understand money. I didn't understand debt. And literally, I found myself at one place that we had $2 million worth of debt. Now, if you can imagine this, and at the time, this had been in the 80s, we're paying 20% interest. Yeah. Not many businesses can make it, you know, at that. It's just almost unsustainable. Yeah. So just those lessons of debt and understanding the market.
So what do you, I mean, I like what you said. And I think, you know, in our industry, there's a lot of people that do get, you know, a small taste. And that small taste, you know, pushes them to say, I got to do more. And I got to grow. You know, we've had a couple interviews on here with people like Eric Crutchfield that just has this burning desire to keep growing. And, you know, and he woke up and had 40 multi-million dollar homes going at one time. And, you know, it's just mind boggling, right? And he didn't get into it too deep as far as what his struggles and his challenges are while he's doing that. But his next steps were to scale that back into a different dynamic, right? And we've had those conversations with other people. So what do you think that one of those, a couple nuggets or big nuggets you would say would be something that you learned before you expand or before you do grow your business further? What are some of the things that you should look at and analyze before you say, okay, now it's time to expand our business?
I think sometimes we want to push the learning curve when it takes time to learn. We want to microwave it, and sometimes it's a crock pot that you've got to cook it with, and we want to make it happen fast. So I think there's a lot to learn, and make sure you've learned as much as you can, because if you don't, you're going to repeat those mistakes. And the stakes get higher. So make sure you learn all you can. And I'd say the second thing, I definitely did not get this. And that would be, if I were to do that same thing now, I would not look at expanding until I had enough money back in reserve that I could operate the new location for a year without having to borrow money, that I've got enough cash. And we know this, cash is king when it comes to things. And I just didn't see it that way. Hey, we had $1,000 in the bank. Why can't we open up a new location? What is it going to take to do that kind of thing? Just no appreciation of what could come. If everything went perfect, we might cash flow it, but things don't go perfect. You have people stealing from you. You hire somebody that was not a good hire. The market changes, all those things. So learning all you can and make sure you have enough cash that you can go and make it without any profit from that business in the future. So I think those things are important, that I would never make those mistakes today. There's different mistakes I probably make, but not those kind of mistakes.
Yeah. No, that's great. Ashton, you've heard that a few times, haven't you?
Yes. And I made that mistake because I was so eager to get into the real estate world. And once I figured out I could do it, I wanted to jump in, and I didn't have some of the basics of keeping finances, keeping records, hiring the right people. I was just, let's go, let's figure this out. People like Eric seemed to have the learning curve, and it just worked. Everything went right really early on, and it just kept going right. For me, I fumbled a lot. I hired the wrong people. I overcommitted on a project, and then I went and got another one, and I couldn't pay for this one, so I had to pause this one. It was just a mess, you know, and it really hurt me financially, and it was really, really stressful. And I've talked about that. There's the bottom line, there's your P&L and all that stuff. But then there's that mental tax. There's that mental profit margin that you have to, you don't talk about that. And making a decision that makes you stay up at night and makes you really horrible to be around with your family, there's value to that, doing it one way or the other. And so, it might not be the most efficient, most progressive, most, you know, hey, in 5 years, we're going to be multimillionaire decision to make. But sometimes let's take the foot off the gas a little bit and make sure we're doing this properly. But you don't know until you know, and you have to make those mistakes. And fortunately for me, and it sounds like for you, Scotty, and I think Tavis has had a lot of great mentors around him. When you surround yourself with people who care about you and want the best for you and who are smarter than you, and sometimes you can do that through podcasts. I know you've been a prolific reader. You've surrounded yourself with masters of productivity and business from around the world just through reading books, even just that. But when you dedicate yourself to that part of it, you can come out on the other side doing well. So it sounds like you had that transformation. So you got to that point, the fire happened, you sort of took a mental step back. And so for you, what was next? What was that next chapter? You said there was a change there. So what was that change for you?
One of the things, and this is part of my spiritual journey, but in some ways I had such a desire for material things and money. I was really raised that way. I'm not being negative about my parents because there are a lot of good things that came from that, but we were just a very materialistic family, and we measured success on your bank account, what you drove in cars and that kind of stuff. And when that burning building situation happened, and I can still remember walking through the building and a couple things happened. One, I was looking at the faces of my employees and to see their stress and anxiety, what's going to happen to them for their job. And it hit me that moment that I'd never really even thought about what their life was like. They were there for me, not the other way around. And that was, in some ways, it hit me in the heart. It really did. The kind of person that I'd become in that way. My heart wasn't to be that way because I saw I gave them a job and I was helping. I needed to think differently about that. And the other thing, and this was almost like the death knell in some ways of I needed to change direction, because at one point in my life, I had this huge desire and passion to make money and get more, acquire more stuff. But it's almost like God took that away from me in that moment. Like I almost like it became almost like abhorrent to me to pursue that anymore. And it really did. And I realized therein lies a problem when you've got a business and you don't even, the thought of getting it profitable again and all those things. And so I was able to sell it to my brother-in-law. That's done quite well with that. He still has that business some 30 something years later and turned it into a much better business and done well at that. And I'm not saying he inherited a very good business, because it was pretty crippled at that moment, and it was on life support. But we worked out a deal that he could get it. And he's been leading that company now for 35 years since then. But for me, it really put me on a spiritual journey of what is it, God, you would have me to do? Because I feel like this is what I was equipped to do. And I remember having conversation with my grandfather, and mostly my grandfather, I remember, like, he couldn't understand it. This is what you were meant to do. We poured into you. And I really felt a calling on my heart to do something different. And so I sold my business, put my house up for sale, and just basically surrendered and said, God, what is it you'd have me to do? And through some unusual circumstances, God opened up the door for me to serve at my home church on an interim basis as the young adult minister and the church administrator. I had experience in business. They needed some help there. And I just said, hey, they basically rented me for a period of time. And they did that for 2 years. And then they decided, you know what, things have worked out pretty good with you. Let's go ahead and make this more of a permanent arrangement. And I ended up staying there 16 more years. And then from there, and that church grew from, you know, running about 1,000 people to running nearly 4,000. It became the largest church in the state of Louisiana. We were doing national conferences, bringing in the John Maxwells, the Andy Stanleys, and a lot of top leadership type people and stuff. So it was a very unique situation. Ashton, you were part of that as well. You got to be a part of the team at different points and stuff. But it opened up opportunities for me, because we're doing national conferences where I was getting to do some consulting and stuff and really enjoyed doing some of those things. And then God opened up a door for me to come into the Dallas market of the very large church as their executive pastor. And I did that for less than 2 years. My wife became disabled and had some health issues, and I just couldn't work 60 or 70 hours a week and take good care of her. And I was doing a little consulting on the side, and I just said, you know, let me just try consulting. And this was in 2008. If you recall, that was the Great Recession happened around that time. Mm-hmm. But I stepped out of a full-time role, went into consulting. Let me figure out my wife, what's going on with her. I can always go back and be an executive pastor. And so I've been doing consulting now for, in April was 16 years. I've been doing that. And there were months and maybe even years where I thought to myself, I don't know if I'll need to go back and get a full-time job. It was, you know, sometimes it was like, hey, we'll see if we can make it a little bit further and stuff. And honestly, the last probably 7 or 8 years, every year has gotten better than the last year. And I've been able to help more churches, more individuals than I ever thought possible. And there's a lot more to that beyond just the consulting, because it's led to starting 2 nonprofits. starting a speaking business as well. And in some ways, it's married that entrepreneurial business background into a heart for ministry and others. It's like only God could have really worked that out, because I really am a unicorn in that sense, because there's not many guys that have had the opportunity to do that. So I feel very blessed and honored. I get to work with a lot of wonderful people and a lot of wonderful churches and organizations.
Yeah, that's awesome. For sure. And I think a couple of things of that. You know, I went to, my undergraduate was at Pepperdine. I went in thinking I was going to be in the ministry. I completely butchered Old Testament, New Testament the first semester and thought, this isn't for me. And I decided to move into communications. But through the years, I worked at a nonprofit for there in West Monroe, Monroe, West Monroe, and worked with child abuse victims and tried to help out that system. And now I work a lot with elderly, and I get to try to help out putting up light bulbs and things that are sort of above and beyond. And I've always felt like, you know, you have that realization that you just sort of do what you can with what you have, and you don't have to have these specific titles. And, you know, I know a lot of people out there sometimes think they have to have this real, I don't know, they force themselves into these ministry positions when you could do a lot of work outside that. But that's another, maybe another discussion. So I know you've worked with, at this point, thousands of people, but you've worked really closely with a lot of high-level leaders in churches and other organizations. And so kind of I think I know your answer, but when you, let's say you got 5 minutes with somebody, how do you initially tell, okay, where this person's at? Or what are a few of the attributes or things they say or things you can look at to say, okay, yep, this is going well, or we've got a lot to work on
here? Yeah, thank you for that question. And again, every person's different and wired different. There are certain things I can usually pick up, and it's maybe a wisdom discerning thing. And when you make, you know, when you make enough mistakes with people, you learn from that, and you try not to make those same mistakes. So some of it's just been, I've been around a lot. It's kind of like the old Farmers Bureau insurance. Like, we know a lot, because we've seen a lot. So some of that comes with the territory. I have prided myself on some organizations just hire me to hire people for them, because I think it's something I'm pretty good at doing, and I have a pretty high success rate in doing that. So I'm looking for certain traits with people. And in fact, I was having a kind of a mentoring coaching session with someone last Friday for breakfast and stuff. And I basically told him within 10 minutes of our conversation, I said, let me just share with you, and I want you to receive this in a way to help you, but I would never hire you based on what I see in you right now. And that probably took him back a little bit, but I said, I'm just being honest with you. We had a 7 a.m. meeting, and you wanted to meet with me, get on my calendar. I drove 25 minutes to meet you. You drove 5 minutes and you're 7 minutes late. I would never hire you. Just wouldn't. Because it shows me a lack of respect of my time and a lack of discipline on your part. And so I just wouldn't. Now, I can help you get better on that, because that's something you can choose to do. There's some things I have no choice in the matter. I'm not going to grow more hair, most likely. I'm never going to play in the NBA, but doggone it, I can show up on time. And I can be ready to take notes with people. So some of that is, I want to see that person have certain level of respect for other people's time, see that they have discipline in their life. But I can look at a person's, what they do in their daily routine, and I can almost predict their success level right now by just looking at what they do day by day. I'm a big person in, you win life by winning the day, and you take one day at a time to have a plan for the day. And I believe that's the secret to becoming ultra productive, is having a plan for the day, and you focus on the right things each day.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, I will say this. Jenny, your daughter, who we're good friends with them back from West Monroe, they live over here now. That first morning that I had also requested a meeting with you at the Cracker Barrel at West Monroe, in West Monroe, she said, just FYI, if you're 5 minutes early, you're late. So if I got there early, I'm sure I was waiting out in the lobby, you know, looking at little trinkets and things, you know, taffy to buy or whatever. I was waiting for Scotty Sanders, because I knew that if I was at all late, this was over. So we had several breakfasts there at the Cracker Barrel. So hopefully I passed that exam, at least that part of the exam, early on. So, you know, my question about your productivity, and I know you've written a couple books, and this is one of the hallmarks of what you train organizations on now. So when you're preparing for the day, basic question, is that something that you typically do the night before, or is that something that you get up early and plan out your day?
For me, I like to begin my day doing that. Now, it doesn't mean I don't give some thought the night before of what's coming, because I think it's good to be having that in your subconscious. But I'm more of, I want to win the day in the first few minutes of each day. And so, in fact, this is my plan for the day. It fits on a 3x5 cart, but this was done at about 5:15 this morning. And so I lay out, you know, my plan for the day, and I follow a framework or template of 6 different pillars that I want to incorporate into my daily routine. But I design my plan where most people operate with a default plan. Most people live by, and this is what I live by for many, many, many years, it's the no plan. And the no plan, it is a plan. It's just the worst plan a person can have. And so I want to have a design plan for my day that I can know if I can just accomplish these 3 things today, if nothing else happens, I've already had success. But I also want to control my calendar and my schedule, because everybody wants to get on my calendar schedule. And if I don't have a plan for the day, I'll crowd out the more important things to the things that are less important. So I want to make sure I'm focusing mindset. So there are 3 mindsets and 3 motivators. I want to have the right mindset, but I also want to have the right motivators. So that's what I do. It takes me less than 10 minutes a day, but it took months, if not years, to develop the framework and the plan to help people to do this. So it wasn't this thing done. It took some time to get there, and I've worked on it and fine-tuned it, that anybody can take this, and I believe they will be more productive and still have a life and not be crazy busy. People think in order to be productive, you have to give up your family, you have to give up your health, and that's just not the case. And I think I'm an example of that. And it's not just I'm an unusual, unique person that I think you can have a plan for your day and you can do that as well.
When I think Tavis, for me, is a good example. I don't know that he plans out every day. A lot of real estate, especially on the investment side, can be really reactive. You know, specifically, Tavis will get a call maybe that morning. Hey, I got a house I need you to look at. It's up in the colony. We need bids in by this time, or it's tomorrow. So you sort of drop what you're doing and go do this. So there is some of that reactive nature. I'm sure you could time block for some of those. But for me, knowing Tavis has really good boundaries, I don't have great time boundaries. For instance, this podcast, you know, it took us a little while to find the best time to do this podcast. Because what about this time in the afternoon, blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, no, afternoons, I can't do that. I can't do weekends or family time. He had a lot of these sort of natural time boundaries that he was okay with just telling me, yeah, we can't do it then. I do this time. So I don't, Tavis, you don't do a structured day specifically, I don't think, but you do time block and you do have specific things that you say, I don't do that on this day or this time, correct?
I mean, I would probably like my schedule to be a little bit more rigid and plan out. Like I envy people that get up at 4 or 5 in the morning. For me, sometimes it seems like, you know, and I was going to ask Scotty that, with you starting your day that early, what time do you go to bed at night? Because, you know, for me, it feels like, you know, if I go to bed earlier, then I could definitely operate that way. But normally by the time I'm actually getting to sleep, it's close to midnight every night, you know, and that's not always the case, but it seems like by the time we, you know, and my wife is, you know, in a very high demand, you know, job as well. And she's more of a night owl. So she gets home, and by the time she gets home late, then she wants to, we do dinner. We usually eat dinner late. And then it's like, she winds down. I'm usually shutting down, going to bed. She's doing something to kind of her quiet time and figuring out her time to decompress, you know, and I know that's different for everybody, you know, from that sense. But for me, it's like trying to definitely figure out that routine to try to get up earlier, because it is great when you do get up early. I think you're able to do so many things, like our friend Walter we interviewed last week. Now, I don't think he sleeps very good, and I think that's part of the problem, but you know, I think he gets up at like 4 a.m. every morning, and most of his day is already like accomplished before 7 a.m., you know.
Yeah,
a lot of the things that he's trying to knock out on the schedule. But yeah, no, I think it is important. You know, a lot of what Scotty's saying is kind of learning, you know, those values in life, and then and mixing that into what you do for a living, what you do for, you know, your passions that you have. But ultimately, yeah, I mean, years ago, I kind of blocked out the weekends to be family time. And it's rare that if I'm actually working on the weekend, but it definitely feels like when I am working on the weekend, it takes away, right? Even if it's not anything that we truly have like specifically on the calendar for family time, but that just seems to be, that's just the blocking, right? That's just the family time that we dedicate for that. Same thing in the evenings most of the time.
But it's that y'all decided, and I mean, goes without saying, you decided family is super important. And I mean, even in real estate, a lot of people just assume you have to work weekends. You just have to take calls whenever. And you're a great example of not having to do that. So I guess a good question for Scotty. Scotty, just for reference, how many books have you read? Because I know it's up there, but about how many books?
I've really quit counting, probably past a couple thousand. In fact, this is the library here, but my wife said I've got to start giving more books away. So I've really moved a little bit away from physical copies. I listen to a lot of books now just because we don't have places for them and stuff. So I've given probably 1,000 books away over the years, but I'd say well over a couple thousand books. They're for probably about a 15, 20-year run. So let's say if it was a 20-year run, I average reading 50 books a year. So that would have been 1,000, but I remember probably 10 years ago, it was over 1500 books. But I listen to a lot of podcasts now, so I may not listen or read as many books as I used to because there are other ways to learn. So I think books are still extremely important. And I'm going to probably read 20 to 30 books a year, but maybe, I mean, there was one year, I think I read 75 or 80 books one year. I even took speed reading course to up my speed on reading and stuff. And listen, I struggled as a young person to read. I had comprehension issues in reading. I actually had to go see a speech therapist in the first, second, and third grade. And here I am now. And I use that a little bit to tell people you can overcome a lot in life. Don't let your handicaps or disabilities hold you back at all on those things. So again, you know, I think I know how much work I put into writing a book. And most people do. They put a lot of work and effort. And man, if you can read a book that takes you 3 or 4 or 5, 6 hours, and you know that person spent probably a couple thousand hours putting their work in that or their experience, just a lot you can gain from that. And my dad has said for many, many years to me, it's a good reminder, he's willing to read a book if he can get one good idea from it. And typically you're going to get more than that. But if you get one thing, that could change the trajectory of your life, your business, your family, and so many different things. Yeah. So I think it's a worth investment time. Yeah. One of my daily disciplines, I'll write down my 3 daily disciplines. By the way, let me put a pin in that. I want to go back to Tavis's thing about getting up early and stuff. I think sleep is very underrated. So I suggest people get 7 to 8 hours regardless. Now, when I was younger, 6 hours would have been a lot for me because I thought I'm tough. I can do it and so forth. We need really 7 to 8 hours worth of sleep. My thing is, how are you wired? What works best for your family? Let that serve you best. Don't be tied to, I'm going to feel like a slug if I don't go to bed early or get up early. No, you let it serve you. You need 7 to 8 hours. You figure out what works best for your family. And back to your question, Tavis, I'm curious on what time you go to bed. Last night I was in bed at 9:30. I was up this morning a little after 5:15. So I slept right at 8 hours, but I was up earlier. Typically I'm in bed between 9:30 and 9:45. Other than Friday nights, I call it my late night. And I try to make it, my wife laughs at me, because I tell her I'm going to try to make it to 10:30. But that's the only day I'll give myself a little bit. And I'll sleep a little bit later on Saturday stuff. But that's just part of my daily routine. I think it's that routine, being consistent on that, is more important than when. It's, do you have a routine that works for you? And stick with it.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So I wanted to say this just because I think as we, you know, continue to do these podcasts and interview different people, you know, you hear a lot of consistency in what people say. And what I hear Scotty saying, Ashton, is a lot of like what Brett Caldwell was talking about, that 10,000 hour journey, right? He put the 10,000 hours in to his business and entrepreneurship and his spiritual journey and all these things that Scotty did early on. And because he did that, you know, he can now master those skills in an interview with somebody for, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, right?
Yeah.
But it's because of the time and the effort and the work that he put into it in the beginning to be where he is today, right? And that's something that we talked about, and Scotty even mentioned this, you know, it wasn't always great. You know, he went through that journey in that time, and it wasn't always excellent, but he went through it and he kept doing it and he stayed consistent. And then now, you know, you form these habits, that just become clockwork, right? It's something that it's so, it becomes so natural after you've done it so long. And I think that's just like anything. And like I said, even for me, I'll be 20 years licensed this year in real estate. I will go back. The very first broker that I worked for, she actually helped me in the sense of time blocking that time with your family. And she said, you know, she said, we don't work Sundays. She goes, we take Sunday off one day a week in real estate, you know, work your schedule around that Sunday. And so it was just as easy as saying, I don't have Sunday available to show you a home, but I could be there Monday, you know, and it was just that easy. It didn't have to make it feel like anything because, of course, you would get pushback from people saying, well, you're in real estate. You don't work on the weekend. Like, what in the world? You know, how can you do any business? You know, that's when people are off, you know, and I always had the mindset like, look, it's like a schedule, you know, and you have to take it and treat it just like a, like how a doctor does or an attorney does. And, you know, you basically, here's my schedule. Here's what I could do. Here's my timeline. Here's what I have available, right? And you work it around those time blocks. And, you know, being back in the gym routine now, you know, that's part of my time blocking as well, right? It's like, oh, I'm not available this time in the morning. You know, it doesn't, they don't have to know I'm going to the gym. It just, that time block is not available, right?
And I think a lot of it too is one, knowing your goals, knowing yourself and being, and honoring yourself and liking yourself enough to stick up for yourself every once in a while and say, I don't do that. I don't meet then or whatever. And so I think whenever you are that way with your own goals and you honor your own goals and you don't give in, I think it does something to your soul. And you know that these things are important enough to me to stick by it no matter what. And it kind of drives you forward. And the question I ask about the books was, one, I think a lot of people just talk about this structure and routine because, like we talked about, you know, Gladwell, the 10,000 hours. You have a plan, whether it's a good plan or not. You're doing a plan. Well, you're getting 10,000 hours in, whether you know it or not. You are getting your 10,000 hours. But what is it? What are you getting your 10,000 hours in about? And so, trying to structure your day, and if you wanted to be known for something and to be someone who said, well, that guy is, man, he really exemplifies X, Y, and Z, that's your 10,000 hours. And so putting those, you know, things into place and reading those books of all those little nuggets you take from things, okay, this person does mornings, this person does it. But after a while, you start to see these patterns of structure and planning and that sort of thing. And so I know we're running a little short on time this morning. I really appreciate all the wisdom so far. Knowing how many books you've read, I am curious. Do you have two or three that you always recommend to people or you go back and read maybe once a year or something like that, that people would want to know about?
Probably the book that I remember that really lit my mind on just that mindset would have been Think and Grow Rich, just what you think is important. I read that when I was in my teen years. Probably in my early 20s, a book that stuck out to me, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. In some ways, I took some of those similar concepts and put that into my book, Quest of the Keys, that I put into a fantasy fiction story. They're not the same, but similar type things. Again, I tell people there's really not a lot new under the sun, right? How you present it, how you package it, and so forth. And then another book that really, because when I went into ministry, you know, I found myself, I was a college dropout at the time, had no formal seminary type stuff. So I went back and got my undergraduate degree in business administration, and then I got my seminary degree. And I got master's in Christian education stuff. So I was on this back in school learning mode, working full time, had young kids and so forth. And in some ways, I just kind of stopped that personal development because I had to focus so much on getting the formal education that needed to do what I was doing and stuff. But I remember being at a conference and actually John Maxwell was speaking and he talked about one of his books, Developing the Leader Within You. And I bought that book at the conference and stuff. And that book really kind of lit my fire again. Like, man, I've not really been working hard on myself about developing that leader in me. I know I've got the gift of leadership. How do I develop that and stuff? So that was a very pivotal book for me to really light that fire to say, you know, because most people, when they get whatever formal education they're getting, they're done learning. They don't learn anything after that. And then therefore, the longer they live, the more, you know, antiquated lack of relevance they may have and stuff. And I just made that decision. That would not be me. I've got my master's degree now, but that was like the perfect timing for me to go to that conference, get that book. And I just made a commitment. I was probably would have been my early 30s at that point, and just said, you know what, I'm going to get on the track and I'm going to be a learner. I'm continuing to learn, and I want to make my every year a better year for me. And that really put me on that track. So those are three books that I can look at different times in my life that I felt like, and there's just so many, it would be hard to say, but those are three that I feel like were defining books for me in some ways.
Well, we hear a lot on the podcast, Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Read that one. Love it.
Sort of the definitive real estate. Hey, what's your favorite book? Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That changed my life. So many people mention that. And I know recently the $100 million offer from Hormozi, that's a great book too. So if you don't know about,
I read that one because of your recommendation, in fact.
Yeah, that's a good one. So that's more of a little bit more of a modern one and on marketing and that sort of thing. So, well, Scotty, is there anything else? I know you have few books, you train organizations, you offer professional speaking to groups. So talk just a little bit about how people can get in touch with you, how you might be able to serve their organization if anyone is interested in learning more about your teaching and that sort of thing. So just walk us a little bit through what people could do to get in touch with you and work with you.
Probably the best place. I'm pretty much on all the social media channels, so you can find me on Facebook and LinkedIn would be another place, Instagram and so forth. But I'd suggest go to ScottySanders.com. That would be my main website. And there you'll find where you can get access to tons of free training stuff. I do a weekly video. In fact, I do two videos a week now and blog articles you can do. But that would get you in my ecosystem. And I would encourage you to sign up for my masterclass called Finding the 25th Hour. It's a free course. It's excellent training to help you to have more margin in your life. And once you do that, you'll put your email address in there. Then you'll start getting free content every week from me. So that's probably the best place to go to continue to get some training from me and stuff. Again, love to speak at organizations. I was just speaking in Indianapolis a couple of weeks ago, and I've got, in fact, I'll be in Dallas speaking here pretty soon. Well, in Euless in May and July, I'm back in in October, I'm in Denton, and August, I'm in Plano. So I do get to speak some in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, but I'll be in Sacramento, I'll be in Denver coming up here pretty soon. So I speak in a number of places, love getting to do that. And my main talk I love to give is the secret to becoming ultra productive. Because if you talk to most people, if they're in some type of business or they're in management or something, in some iteration of this, they're going to say their biggest challenge, they feel overwhelmed. And I help people to go from overwhelmed to being ultra productive. And that's by creating margin. And that's what Tavis sounds like he has. He's got margin in his life and how to create margin. And you create margin in your life by having more capacity than you have load. And I help people to increase their capacity. They're capable of doing more than they ever thought while reducing their load. And oh, by the way, one of the best ways to reduce your load is to say no. And to guard your calendar a little bit. So I teach people on how to do that, that they can get more done and be more productive than they ever thought possible, but still have margin in their life. I love giving that message to people and seeing it work for them, because most people have been drowning for years and they just think that's the way it has to be.
Yeah, most people like me, you know, you get into another phase, you're trying to do more, you stay up late, you get up earlier, you just try to do more during the day, and there's only so much you can do. And then you end up getting burned out and turn into Cheetos for a counselor. And I've said several times, Cheetos is a bad counselor. So Tavis, you have any other questions for Scotty before we are done for the day?
No, it's just, you know, I hear these things and Scotty, it sounds like you have kids. I'm sure they're older now, but, and you might have some grandchildren now, but how do we get our kids to start thinking this way about being productive? we've got a 30-year-old and a 19 years old, you know, and of course they're, you know, my 19-year-old is about to graduate, and it's tough from a dad perspective, because now it's like, okay, what's next? What are you doing? How are you being productive? What are you doing with your day? It's all those things. And obviously you got to think back to a little bit when we were that age and just where our mindset was. And we obviously didn't think of it more than what we needed to do, right? In the sense of
that's your Scotty. Scotty already had 9 stores at this point. He's 19.
I know, right?
People,
yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah. So we won't count your experience at 17, but the typical 18-19 yeah. year old these days.
What's your best word of advice with that? Like how to? I mean, we got to make these kids make it their own idea, right? You know, but and aware of that. But how do we? What's the best way to do that?
One of the things I've been greatly blessed with, and Ashton knows this a little bit, my daughter runs her own marketing company, but she's worked with me for years. My son is a VP of sales for a large IT company, but I get to work with them and coach them almost every week. So I get to pour into them. They come to me. So we have that adult relationship. And some of that is modeling that for them and modeling having good margin, having boundaries, but leading your, to me, people ask, what is the greatest leadership principle there is? And I always say, it's leading yourself well. You start there and you model that for others. And then people say, I want what that person's got. So you always start with yourself. And one of the reasons why I wrote the book, Quest of the Keys, is it is really for the younger generation. It's really more for that middle school through college age group, because they get into story form and they enjoy the story and you know, connecting with characters and so forth. So it's a way that they can learn without thinking they're learning that much, because they get into the characters, but they're learning about the importance about having a purpose in life and how to prioritize and how to plan. So that's another, you can go to questofthekeys.org. It's on the ScottySanders.com website, but you can order on Amazon. I got an Audible version of it, and also a soft copy book that you can get, and an ebook as well. But I'm not saying every 30-year-old would probably want to read it, but if they enjoy story, almost like a fable type thing, if you think about, and what really gave me this idea, I read Og Mandino's book years ago, The Greatest Salesman. I don't know if you're familiar with that book or not, but it's really, that's what it is. You learn these principles through a story. So I really stole that idea from Og Mandino and put that into leadership, character development stuff, into a story form that's done quite well. So that would be something you could, give them as a gift, let them read it, and maybe you can ask them some questions about it.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Well, Scotty, thank you so much for your time and wisdom. I've had a lot of breakfast with you. Your breakfast is sort of your mentorship time. So at some point, Tavis and I will—I don't even know. I think the closest Cracker Barrel is over on the other side of town. I don't know that I've eaten at a Cracker Barrel since you and I had breakfast. And
we'll make it Western happen Grove anytime. Times,
but we may have to update our place, but maybe we can do a breakfast mentorship meeting. That would be really, really awesome. So thank you so much for your time, Scotty. And if anyone wants to get in touch with him, we'll definitely link his information in the show notes, and we'll be putting this out on social. Until next time, definitely like, subscribe, share this podcast with a friend. We're bringing you information like this, interviews with real estate professionals and people that are in the DFW area who are just high level people like Walter that we had last week that is in the marketing world. And we've interviewed some of the top notch real estate professionals in Dallas and even and down in Austin, Dustin down in Austin. So we've seen a lot of people come through here. You start to hear a lot of the similar things. So go back and listen to some of those interviews. I think you'll get some nuggets from those as well. But until next time, we hope you have a great day.